right, we're back. Charming and very bright and informed gentleman on who's an extraordinary writer, terrific reputation. Great Kirkus reviews on his book. His name is Alan A. Winter. Alan, I love names you don't have to spell. Alan A. Winter. He is the author of a number of books. The one we're talking about here today is Island Bluffs. It's published by KB Publishing. It's available in paperback, ebook, and Kindle. And you all know you can go to Amazon.com, BarnesandNoble.com to get a copy of the book. It's a fascinating book. But since he wrote it and I didn't, I'll let him tell us about it. Alan, welcome to the show. Well, just a brief overview of the book and the fact that I think you've combined fiction and nonfiction, and to ask what the rationale was for that.
As soon as they bought the house, bizarre things started to happen. The first bizarre thing is the day they moved in, someone came to buy the house from them. And he said, no, this is the house of my dreams. This is what I want. I'm not selling the house to you. And two different sets of bizarre things happened. The town kept on making it very difficult for him to get a zoning ordinance. He wanted to make an addition to the house. The gentleman came back and offered him a blank check to buy the house from him. And again, he said no. And there was a secret there. There was a problem. At the same time, he kept on hearing music when there were no radios in the house. And he had workmen working, and their tools were being displaced, like a carpenter's screwdriver ended up in the dishwasher. Another instrument ended up in a locked car when the guy had the keys and the car was locked already. All kinds of bizarre things started to happen. The bottom line, in cutting to the chase, is that there was a hidden room in the attic that what he discovered was that a German spy had lived in his house during World War II, and that certain people in the town, and this takes place on the New Jersey coast, remembered all of a sudden, because they bought the house and put in a request for a zoning for a building permit, that they better get this house off the market, and there's stuff hidden there that people don't want to, shouldn't find. For instance, he found 30 sets of rain slickers in the basement. He found provisions. And what had happened was that there had been a German submarine, a rogue submarine at the end of World War II in February of 1945, that had, and this is all documented, had defied German orders to stay in the Mediterranean around the Gibraltar area. The captain unilaterally decided to come to the east coast of the United States and do as much damage as they possibly could. And his men would come off the boat and literally do R&R in this house. And this sub was responsible for sinking a number of ships. And what a lot of people don't know is that in 1942, there was the Battle of Atlantic, so to speak, or the Atlantic Massacre, it has different names, that some 397 ships were sunk off the east coast of the United States in the early part of America's entry into the war. So there's a story here. And then to answer the second part of your question, why take the history, make it into a novel? I am a historian in the sense that I was a history major. I went to Rutgers College, graduated with honors in history, but I'm not a legitimate historian. And if you need to have the truth, if you will, with quotation marks about the truth, it's actually easier to write a novel and put the truth inside it for me. I'm not questioned in that regard. And I don't have the credentials that are going to stand up to PhDs, et cetera. So that's why I turned it into a novel.
Yeah, well, you're also very, very humble in talking about a book that's getting great reviews. And I may disagree with you about the degree of expertise you have as a historian based upon what the reports on this book. So the book is more about it's more about other things than just the ship sinkings, correct?
Absolutely. That's only the backstory. Because if it was just, and this happened, and this happened, and that happened, it's sort of like someone reporting what they did over the summer vacation in grade school. No, this is a compelling story that readers would enjoy. It starts off with a couple that cannot conceive to have a child. They've tried everything they possibly can, and they seek this fertility expert. Is very quirky. They hear about his last resort in Lakewood, New Jersey, and it turns out that this scientist / geneticist, fertility expert, was a survivor of the Mengele twin experiments during World War II. Dr. Joseph Mengele did experiments on about 3,000 twins of Jews and Gypsies during the war. And he is a survivor of those experiments. And he makes a Faustian deal with the couple who are my protagonists that I will help you have a biological child, but at the same time you have to agree to serve as a surrogate for another fetus or embryo that I'm going to implant in you. You're going to carry the twins, and at birth, you will give up the one that's not genetically related to you. You'll never see this baby again. So that's the plot. That's the setup. That's almost the first couple pages of the book. And what happens is that, you know, they're desperate to have the child. The wife says, yes, I'll do this. And then she has the equivalent of buyer's remorse. What if I can't do this? What do I, you know, do I want to save this child? And she learns as she goes to the doctor's clinic. And third, the other caveat is they have to be 30 minutes from the clinic in her third trimester. And she sees and learns that there were 10 other women who had the same, made the same deal. So her child is going to be the 11th child that this quirky doctor has done this for. And then the question becomes, why? Is he a pedophile? What is he doing? What's going on? And they're all boys. All the children are boys. So that's the story that is compelling, that people, I think, can, you know, grip them or grab them, that this Mengele, you know, survivor is from the Holocaust, begins to talk about a broader topic of forgiveness.
But the book is filled with so many fascinating tacits to it that and components that was this difficult to separate the themes, not lose the clarity, and not create chaos?
No, not at all. You know, because basically, as a writer, I let my characters tell the story, and you know, it was simplistic in the sense: couple wants baby, couple moves to house. House is not what they expected. The town is not welcoming. The doctor has an agenda. And from that, the story unfolds. And it unfolds with twists and turns that one are, you know, doesn't expect. And I have to tell you, when I write...
Did you expect those twists and turns when you were writing it?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, did you anticipate it, or did you just create them as you went along?
I created it as I went along.
Okay,
I didn't
right. Sorry to interrupt. Go ahead.
Going. I really didn't know where this was going. I didn't anticipate it. I knew who my character was because at the end of the day, you know, it's not a history book. I'm competing with movies and, you know, streaming videos and everything else that we have around us now that occupy people for entertainment. So I've got to create a compelling story that's going to say, you know what, put the other stuff aside for a while. Give me a few hours of your time and I'm going to entertain you and make you think. And that's important to me. I want you to learn something, and I want you to think.
Alan, how does this differ, Ari? Is this similar to your other novels?
No, totally different, Stu. My last novel, which Kirk has said was, you know, in the category of best book of 2013 with some other books, was about the oldest Bible ever written.
All right, can you quickly give a website, or should people just Google you?
I have a website, alanwinter.com.
All right, thanks so much. Fascinating. Great having
you
on,
Mr.
Stu Taylor. More straight ahead.